KUW 95.9 FM. Thank you for listening and stay tuned for more great community radio.
Somewhere between old enough to know better and too young to care. Things happen in ways that they should and shouldn't. That's how it gets done. The difference is between what's not worth crying about sees crying's worth. Somewhere or nowhere, walking softly or traveling hard, the way footsteps step. Lookings to believe have ways of getting in the way of how thinking sees. Then glories or regrets have some ways of competing, playing like contestants, crowding into minds, not leaving well enoughs alone is a lesson to learn. And sometimes howling under the moon wears its silence, memorying DNA dreams into living vibrations of remembers.
In Winnipeg is Badness and Madness on Fantastic Friday with Rafi Kwai, Prince Ohuna, Princess Chinsula, Queen Victoria, Dr. P and John, who is here but never here. But also here sometimes is Princess Rachel on the editorial time. And always here at this time is Princess Catherine, making sure that we fade in and out and round and about and making enough sound to keep us around. Oh, we're coming down. You hear from well, you hear some different things. You hear Wab Kanul talking about progress in terms of our relations with the United States. You would hear Yusuf Ibrahim Yusuf talking about Sudan, and you hear some presentations coming through the editorials of the Prince. Ugona. Hold tight.
No. Oh, no.
Yes.
We the people of the station.
The rhythm drummers, Gaia.
We don't need no more people. Deception. No. Oh, no. We the people of the station. We don't need no segregation. No.
Manuela, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. And the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
He, of course, is in, you're still in Mississauga, I believe, a premier, where you had your meeting with the other premiers today. What was your reaction when Doug Ford put Chrystia Freeland on speakerphone in your meeting and she thanked you all for your work on a day when she is leaving as Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister?
Well, it was nice to hear from Chrystia Freeland. Certainly we've had the ability to do some good things together for Manitobans and Canadians. And I'd been texting with her earlier in the day. And, you know, it was just nice to have that chance as a group to thank her for the job that she did. But I want to make clear that while there is this whole drama unfolding in Ottawa, the conversation in the room really did focus on Trump and how do we present this unified response as the premiers. You know, the leadership, you know, is for us to present this Team Canada approach, and we are united when it comes to the need for investments in the military, border security, to crack down on drug trafficking. And the reason why we as premiers were able to come together on those points is because what's the downside? These are things that benefit Canadians, they benefit Manitobans. And so certainly, even though you have an interesting day in Ottawa, to you know, perhaps put it charitably, we as premiers are still focused on job one, which is protecting jobs, protecting your jobs and our economy, and just making sure that we're ready for January 20th.
Well, look, interesting is one word for it. I'll give you that, Premier. But I'm wondering, as you know, someone who has been asked to be part of Team Canada since that first minister's meeting you had a couple of weeks ago, where you made the very salient point that you're not going to argue your way out of this with Donald Trump. I wonder where you think this leaves Team Canada. If the chair of the Canada-U.S. Committee at the federal level, the person who led the NAFTA renegotiations last time, is gone, and the prime minister is even further diminished by this move.
Well, I think it shows that it is the premiers who are going to be doing a lot of heavy lifting this time. And I think that that was already the plan. We communicated that to the prime minister and to the ministers who were on those previous calls. But we've also been reaching out to our counterparts in the United States of America. We're talking about people in Congress. We're talking about people at the state level. And it really is, I think, that kind of all hands on deck approach that we as the leaders of the provinces and territories can bring forward right now. Adding those perspectives when it comes to boosting the military spending so that it reaches 2%, that NATO target. Again, adding resources on the border, helping to crack down on the scourge that's driving the addictions crisis, drug trafficking. When we put that all together, I do think that we're building a comprehensive approach. And, you know, at this moment where the federal government is going through this turmoil, I think it is hopefully reassuring to Canadians that you do have a consensus among premiers, even on topics where on other days perhaps there's a little bit of disagreement, if you will. Today, 100% unity. Unity right. That we need to present a common Team Canada approach that, as we still look ahead to January 20th, the opening moves, if you will, in terms of our response with the U.S. should focus on the border, should focus on military spending, should focus on cracking down on illegal drugs in this country. I think that given the timing of where we're at, it's a good opening step in terms of Team Canada's relationship with an incoming Trump 2.0 administration.
Look, I appreciate the alignment.
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
give love a miss.
Say blues, all of the other rain.
That's the funkiest Rudolph you'll ever get. You dig it?
Hi, I'm Julian Cooper. You're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
The fuck is a boiled peanut?
It's a sunny day. The gang's all here. No chip on my shoulder. It's a sunny day. The gang's all here. No chip on my shoulder.
2910 East Genesee Street, where niggas mix weed with they nicotine treats. I wish I had a soda and a dime piece speech, so I could just kick back and sip my lime in peace. Easy, breezy, beautiful, erratic, scatter-minded, manic, borderline addict. I try to take the sober route and end up on a dead end. Now everything I joke about just ends up on a Reddit. Gator skin coat, Florida heat, no joke. Feel like the Tiger King, these bitches want more joke. Leo the sun sign, I'm sipping the Cosmo. Make money like pronto, when Gucci my poncho. Ain't no rain up, pain on me. Niggas sweating up the block, but they ain't the same on me. Label always up my ass like ain't no beef. Why can't all these label niggas just let me be, let me breathe? Niggas want me all right, P. I've been resting with my peace, and that's the irony. I'm a dying sunflower, leaving a trail of seeds. In the 813, this my legacy.
It's a sunny day. The gang's all here. No chip on my shoulder. It's a sunny day. The gang's all here. No chip on my shoulder.
He was born so we wouldn't. Opportunity to receive the light and life he brings.
Christ, we worship your majesty. Ooh. Lord, forever's what you'll always
what
be.
Always be.
God, you came as man to dwell.
As man to dwell.
Jesus, our hope.
In a pile, son got a ticket to fly. He can make it if he tried to the sky like a Coney Island ride. Getting pages from his super agent. Community rages at the clout of the cages. No doubt, center stages, mad phases from behind crazes, flipping through the faces. Paper chases, love in many places. Pros and cons, flicks between the races. He
behold the rock, cold for sweatshops, gone in sex shop, replaced by sex shops, the highest bidder, no room for the quitter, game seven tickets, under counterfeiters, three CDs a week, dropping needles, like the Black Beatles, take heed, what you need is pitch up, never switch up, smack the backups, pack them pickups, resurrection of the two-man vocal section, the spirit in your dark-ass direction, ducking them spray-ups on my way when I thought be layups, won the battle wars, 1,001 push-ups, earmarks the return of them Roosevelt Rough Riders rising, charging hard from the point guard, watch what you pray for, but know the team that you play for, need I say more, scared of the resurrection, sacrifice y'all, then maybe the revolution is basketball, changes, generations, which means rearrange generations, stuck on PlayStations, them the new plantations, I set a million heads, waiting for another nation, to make your world be free, no shopping sprees, there ain't no stopping me, here's the feed, not the weed, got the seed, got speed, what you need is
hi, I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
This is for my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my cans. Sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and our uprisers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
Hold it now, wait, hold it. That's played out. Hit it.
Don't you give me all that jive about things you wrote before I was alive. Cause this ain't 1823, ain't even 1970. Now I'm the guy named Curtis Blow, and Christmas is one thing I know. So every year, just about this time, I celebrate it with a rhyme. Gonna shake it, gonna bake it, gonna make it good. Gonna rock, shock, knock it through your neighborhood. Gonna lose, gonna flip it till it's understood. My rap been about to happen like a knee you been slapping, or a toe you been tapping on a hunk of wood. Bought a red suited dude with a friendly attitude and a sleigh full of goodies for the people on the block. Got a long white beard, maybe looks kinda weird, and if you ever see him, he can give you quite a shock. Now people, let me tell you about last year when the dude came flying over here. Well, the hawk was out, snow's on the ground. Folks stayed in to party down. The beat was thumping on the box, and I was dancing in my socks. And the drummer played at a solid pace, and the taste of the bass was in my face. And the guitar player laid down the heavy layer of the funky chunky rhythm of the disco beat. And the guy with the 88 started to participate, and I can sure appreciate the sound so sweet.
You know Dasher and Dancer, Prancer and Vixen, Comet and Cupid and Donder and Blitzen. But do you recall?
What's that?
The most famous reindeer of all. Come on!
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows.
Come on! Come on!
All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudolph join in any reindeer game. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say,
what's that?
Rudolph with your nose so bright.
Yeah, this is Funky Rudolph, another funky Christmas tune for those who love Christmas.
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, you go down in history forever. You go down in history forever. You go down in history, you go down in history, you go down in history.
Hey, you're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM. Ka-chow.
For those who enjoy Christmas ghetto style, get it down. Ain't no silent night.
They are spread red carpet. One thing we have to tell on us, so watch out. Adam Mercy. Watch me now. It name murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date me and the queen in a day park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the can, so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life, them won't forgive me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call on me to over me, man, a fight. And that now one, no time in a them life. Me no cut up, I can model every time. Absolute niceness, come with pay rhyme. First class dress code and your style a lick. The quality, my feet come back quick. Cause murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Truffle the date me a the queen in a the park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the can, so no better watch that.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Think you where you come from? As long as you're a black man,
a black woman or a black child.
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity
and perspicacity.
Because if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Westmoreland,
I was coming to you all the way from West Africa in the country called Nigeria, is the brother they call Prince Ugonna, so to give you news and views from Africa. Prince Ugonna, powered and Payaka.
Yes, good morning, Vuko. Good morning to all of our listeners. Unokedu, Kekwan, and greetings from Africa. The first piece is echoing last week's piece on Uhuru. Three activists with the Uhuru movement will be sentenced by a Florida judge on Monday as part of a legal saga that began when the FBI raided the group in 2022, accusing the anti-war Black Liberation Group of working as Russian agents. The Uhuru Three are Omali Yeshitela, chair of the African People's Socialist Party, and white solidarity activists Penny Hess and Jesse Neville. Listening.
We were charged, as you mentioned earlier, with being Russian agents, and something that they determined, that is the United States government, that began in 2014, on or about 2014, and extended up until July 29, 2022, according to them. So after 50 years or so, of more, 60 years in my instance, of working for the liberation of African people, the U.S. government determined that that since 2014, I became an employee, an agent under the direction and control of a foreign government, namely Russia. And then they charged me also, the three of us, Penny Hess, Jesse Neville, and I, with being with conspiracy to work for a foreign government without registering with the Department of Justice, which was an extraordinary charge. And so after a week-long trial or so, the jury examined things that came from more than 2.5 million books in equivalency, 13 terabytes of information that they stole from our devices. A jury determined that we were not Russian agents. And which meant, of course, that they agreed that the only thing we'd ever done is work for the liberation of African people, on the one hand. On the other hand, they convicted us of conspiracy to do something that never happened. And the Russian agent charge carried with it a 10-year prison sentence. And the conspiracy charge carries us, the conviction carries the possibility of a 5-year prison sentence and $250,000 fine. So on December 16th, we'll be going to Tampa, Florida, and we want everybody to come with us to face sentencing for, as they said, conspiring to do something that never happened. The fact is, our party has, against every notorious war that the United States government has been involved in. We concluded a long time ago the inability of the United States to engage in a just war. And we were opposed to what they were doing in Vietnam, the United States did in Vietnam. We were opposed to the aggression against Cuba, the aggression against peoples all around the world. And this notion that somehow the Russians had to tell us to be opposed to what's happening in Ukraine is ridiculous for a number of reasons. And one of them being that, generally speaking, the Black Liberation Movement in this country has historically been opposed to those wars. And that's been a strategic problem for the United States, that even Foreign Affairs, one of the journals of the leading thinking representatives of the ruling class in this country, has complained about affecting in a negative way U.S. foreign policy because Black people have always been opposed to these wars. And that was true of us, too. So the notion that somehow the Russians had to teach us to do this is ridiculous. And I also think it's important to say that we believe in free speech in a very serious way. That this was an assault on freedom of speech, the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights. and that black people in this country have been in the vanguard of the struggle for the Bill of Rights, for free speech. And that's been absolutely necessary, because when the First Amendment, the Bill of Rights, was ratified by the United States Congress in 1791, black people were property. We had no rights to speak or do anything like that. So who else would fight harder for the right to free speech, the right for freedom of assembly, the Bill of Rights and black people? And we've been in the vanguard. And so there's nothing that is new about that. And this assault that they're making on the Uhuru movement, the African People's Socialist Party, is actually an assault on African people, our agency, our right to have freedom of thought, to convict us of thinking something. And what they say we think is up to their interpretation. So we didn't do anything. And that was the foundational charge. The jury said they didn't work for Russia, but they conspired to do something that never happened. So it's a thought crime that they have convicted us for. And we have fought it all along, and we continue to fight that.
Yeah, man. A lot of people don't know Yeshe Taylor, but Yeshe Taylor come from way back in time. Don't forget the African Liberation Movement and other things like that. They've been trying to put away different strugglers coming out of the black community, putting them away or taking them away. Either they kill them or they put them in jail, let them rot. But they rather put them in jail, let them rot. And that's what they're trying to do with Yeshe Taylor right now. So hold tight.
Yeah, this second piece is also from Democracy Now, where the woman addresses the judge that's been released by President Biden. Stay tuned.
Leanne was injured in an airstrike, in an artillery strike on a mosque that happened to be by the school where she was sheltering.
This is very emotional, very heavy, just hearing and having to relive all of this. I mean, it's just reopened wounds that have never healed. And this is very, very difficult, very, very heavy. I shouldn't be having to relive this, especially at Christmas time. I mean, this is just, it's unacceptable.
I'm so sorry, Sandy, that we are asking you to do this. You have been so incredibly brave in talking about this over the years. And I'm so sorry this has been all reopened for you at this moment with President Biden's pardon of one of the judges. So if you
know, and I need to talk about it. I need to defend my son, because he's not here to defend himself. And I am his mother, and I always will be. So I appreciate being here and getting to talk to you. It's just very difficult for me. My son did nothing more than anything that most of us, as you know, kids did, you know, experimenting and living his life and making mistakes, that we usually all get to just learn and evolve and grow from. He did nothing more than be at an underage drinking party with tons of other kids, but he was caught. And he went in front of Judge Civarella, because this is the process that they had. And you know, you're trusting in this system that, you know, this is, you know, the good for our kids. And I was told this is, you know, just to scare him, to get him back on track, to make sure, you know, everything is well. And he went into the county juvenile detention center for a month. And in that time, he wanted nothing more. He understood and what he was missing in his life. He just wanted to get back home. He wanted to get back. It was his senior year about to begin. He wanted to get back into his wrestling training, just get back into his life. And I had the teachers, I had his coaches, myself talking and sending letters to the judge's chambers in care, you know, of my son's character and explaining all of this. And I was 100% sure there was no doubt in my mind that when we went in front of that judge, my son was coming home with me that day, but that didn't happen. And he was sent to that juvenile detention center in Pittston. And I believe it was like 8 months. he lost his senior year. He never had the chance to wrestle again. Any chance that he had for a scholarship. He came out of there very bitter, very angry, pent up with anger. He couldn't look you in the eye. I don't know what happened in that facility. My son was a very big, strong, proud boy. And he came out broken. I don't know what happened. I try to not think about what happened, and he would never talk about it, but something not good happened to him in there. And it snowballed. He just never recovered. He got into a fight and had to go in front of back into the court system. And actually those charges were dropped. They were not found, but because he was on probation from Judge Civarella, he sent him away again, even though he was found not guilty of those charges. And this time he was sent to their other for-profit center, which was 5 hours from our home. It was in Western Pennsylvania near Pittsburgh. And he did a year there, and then was released if he would do this boot camp, which he excelled, and they couldn't talk more good about my son and his character and the discipline that he showed. But it just never ended. It just snowballed. It changed him. It broke him. It stole his youth, his childhood. He would never, ever recover. And it just became too much. And he shot himself in the heart. And we were fighting this. We knew something was not right. We could not get into that courtroom with media. Anything that was trying to be done was shot down. Judge Lacuda tried to step up, and she was ousted and thrown out of the court. These judges had this power, and they did what they wanted. And they started their own for-profit centers. And at the time, Judge Conahan was the president judge. So he appointed his friend, Michael Civarella, as the juvenile judge, who he knew would send these kids into the system. And they funneled them in and collected the money for every bed that was filled. And until this money line was seen, that's when the feds stepped in and all of this came out.
And it was exposed that they were getting kickbacks from these for-profit jails. Sandy, I wanted to go back to when you confronted the former judge, now jail, Judge Civarella, outside the courtroom after your son's sentencing.
My kid's not here!
So this last piece, also from Democracy Now!, they speak with acclaimed filmmaker Alex Gibney, whose latest documentary, The BB Files, features leaked behind-the-scenes footage of police interrogations of Netanyahu, his wife, and those accused of bribing him. Stay tuned.
Our first question for you is whether you or any of your family members have received any gifts or favors from wealthy businessmen in the last decade.
This is preposterous and insane. You're trying to incriminate the Prime Minister on nonsense.
In this case, the facts are really simple.
The Prime Minister and his wife are getting gifts.
It's a total lie.
And on the other side, Netanyahu did favors.
We must find a way to reward him.
What do you need to reward the Prime Minister for?
Government officials are not allowed to take gifts. This is corruption. The
police, they investigated everybody.
If this comes out, I'm dead.
What did you get?
Cigars. Shalsheret, tabak.
Sarah Netanyahu is very important. Both of them never surrendered, never compromised.
My husband is the strongest prime minister we've ever had.
We start to believe that they are untouchable.
After the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power.
When people serve for too long, it gets into their head.
The indictment made him dependent on the extreme right in Israel.
He's now captive to their whims.
This is nonsense.
Put all Israel in the turmoil.
Netanyahu is the architect of chaos.
He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability.
It's not a cover-up.
He tried to kill the system. Nobody is above the law.
Do you remember that line from The Godfather?
Keep your friends close, keep your enemies closer.
I was leaked these tapes. They're interrogation videotapes done by the police that were a precursor to the indictment of Netanyahu on corruption charges. And in the tapes, you can see Netanyahu, his wife Sara, his son Yair, and many of the people who attempted to bribe Netanyahu. I thought they were explosive and very important. This, by the way, was before 10/7 or the war on Gaza. This is when there was a big crisis over the judicial reform attempts by Netanyahu, which, of course, were done in part so he could elude any consequence from, impending bribery charges. But the key thing to understand about distribution in Israel is when I got these leaked tapes, I made a promise to the source that I would not distribute the film in Israel because the source could go to prison. There are privacy laws that make it mandatory that if you are photographed as part of an official proceeding, i.e. a police interrogation, you can't cause those videotapes to be released. So unless you get the permission of Netanyahu and Sarah, et cetera, which wasn't going to happen. So anyway, that is the occasion of why this film can't be released and why we had to, black bar the trailer in order so that the trailer wouldn't be freely visible. I couldn't cause the trailer to be freely visible in Israel, though I should say that it's being widely pirated there.
So Netanyahu is going after you?
Netanyahu, as soon as it was announced that we were going to premiere at the Toronto Film Festival, he went to an Israeli court and tried to stop the screening in Toronto. Now, how that was going to happen, I don't know. But in any event, it was denied. But he certainly tried to stop us. And I understand the Netanyahu administration, through a number of mechanisms, are trying very hard to go after a guy named Raviv Drucker, who's one of the producers of the film and is a longtime Israeli journalist who has an expertise in this kind of corruption, has been the bane of a number of prime ministers, but particularly Netanyahu.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. It begins with Ami Ayalon, the former head of Israel's internal security service, Shin Bet.
And after the catastrophe of the 7th of October, the war became another instrument to stay in power. He survived in a state of war. He survived in a state of instability. He survived when we fight each other. He survived when our enemies fight each other.
A forever war is beneficial to Netanyahu. This makes people feel like they are always in danger, like they always need him. There is always some huge threat. I think that helps him remain prime minister.
That last voice, the young Israeli woman, Gili Schwartz, is from Kibbutz Be'eri, where more than 100 people were killed on October 7th last year. Alex, if you can elaborate on what they are saying. I mean, as we speak, Netanyahu is in court in Israel right now. What this means, they say he wants to wage wider war because otherwise he's no longer going to be protected by the prime ministership, by being prime minister.
That's right. I mean, I think, strictly speaking, this is a film about corruption, and it starts with petty corruption, being bribed with gifts and cigars, champagne, jewelry. But then the ultimate corruption is how he's tried to elude a reckoning for his misdeeds. And in so doing, he wraps himself in the mantle of prime minister and then wages endless war. Now, I can't think of really anything more corrupt than somebody who's administering the killing of women and children in order to be able to stay in power. But that is what they are alleging, and that is what the film is about.
Let's go to another clip from the BB Files. This one begins with Prime Minister Netanyahu addressing the U.S. Congress this past July.
Together we shall defend our common civilization. Together we shall secure a brilliant future for both our nations.
Well, I would say that, tragically, the Americans don't know how to call him out. There was no plan for ending the war of Gaza, bringing the hostages home, and changing dynamics in the region. And things only got worse. Netanyahu is the architect of chaos. And as we speak, when all eyes are on the front in Gaza and the front in Lebanon, he is implementing his plan in the West Bank with the extreme right. He may create a situation where it's irreversible.
This is a trial that's been going on for 4 years. Netanyahu has been trying to elude a reckoning related to these charges for that much time. And what he constantly does is to wrap himself in the mantle of leadership. And so what better way to do that? And this is a tried and true political formula, as grisly and as grotesque as it is to wage war, is to continue to use weapons and say we're in danger of being annihilated, so we must strike back. But I mean, the destruction that's going on in Gaza, for example, is a kind of wanton destruction at this point that is just beyond any kind of moral reckoning. So I think that also the United States bears some responsibility for this. That's why we included those clips of him at the Congress. You know, we supply.
Yemen. Yemen.
Yeah.
Greetings to the eye. How are you?
Yes, I'm fine. How are you today?
I'm not as good as you, but I'm still alive. I'm keeping alive and well.
Yeah, I think you are better than me.
Yeah, how are things going on in Sudan?
Yeah, things still continue the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's still going on. But yeah, it seems there is some kind of processing.
Mm-hmm.
And people are happy with that kind of processing.
You talked about the main army, the Sudanese army is going after the RSF, but there's still a lot of casualties in Darfur. And if it's only the RSF that destroying Darfur, how is the regular army responding to that? And how much success are they having against the RSF in terms of preventing more bloodshed in Darfur? You go.
Okay, that is true because, yes, the Sudanese army, there is focusing more in the middle of Sudan And also they're just working with the foreign African African army, and they're just the foreign troop and Sudanese troop. They're located in area of the capital of Darfur, and they just protecting that capital of Darfur is called Fajr, and protected that many come and many people, and there is many Sudanese Darfurian, they move in that area. And also the Sudanese army, they have the ability, because they have the kind of air force that are protecting that area, and also they are just controlling, and now they have the really advanced and moving processing in Khartoum and surround it, and also in the province of Wat Madani, and they seem they closer to finish that kind of processing, and if that done, the focus will be all over the Darfur. That's what I am seeing is going on there. Yeah, and just also there is some question of the Sudanese outside, or sometime I made that kind of question that people asking here in different countries. I heard it, and also in Canada. And they're saying there is a Sudanese, when the war broke out, they just run and flee the countries. There's a million and million Sudanese in different other countries, neighboring countries or somewhere. And just as and they're not hearing anything about them, about the Sudan. Yeah, but also I have the answer for that, because Sudan, there is many people don't understand what the Sudan is and what the Sudan was. And the people who have been living in Sudan, there is many foreigners and many strangers. And when the war broke out, they flee the Sudan, and they don't have anything to do with Sudan, and they don't know the knowledge about the Sudan, how the Sudan is structured, how the Sudan geographically, how the Sudan historically, and that's why you see the people are someday silent, they don't say anything about the Sudan. And also there is a Sudanese war forced them and to flee the Sudan, and they're still connected with their family, because they have the family, extended family, and there is a friend, and there is community, and they're just still supporting the Sudan and Sudanese people, like people like including like my friend Yai or me or the others, the expresses, that are also the people should know. We still supporting our people, and we follow day by day, and we asking them what is going on. And also you should know this war, majority of Sudanese remain inside of Sudan, and if you go in different provinces, like especially in Darfur, you can find that there is a in every big cities there is a camp, like Niala, they have the camp of the Sudanese, they gather there, like in city of Zelinga, you can find the camp there, and also in the Fashir or Jenena, they still remain in their countries. And when you come in the middle of Sudan, there is people move.